Okay, so Parshas Mishpatim in the Meshech Chachma, Mishpatim, of course, is Malei V'Gadush, is filled up with all different halachas, basically, you know, all different aspects of Torah. So I want to pick a couple of short vertlach tonight from the Meshech Chachma, where he takes little ways of reading the psukim. Why does it use this word as opposed to that word? Why does it interject this idea in the midst of other ideas which are foreign? Why does it use this name as opposed to that name? And we'll see how he really weaves together, in particular in this parasha, the Torah Sheba'al Peh together with the Torah Shebiksav, that we're able to discover in the Torah Shebiksav all kinds of references, talochas that come out from the Torah Sheba'al Peh. So I want to start with something from Hilchos Nezikin, you know, from the laws of damages, which, you know, from the Bavas, which certainly, you know, finds a very prominent place in this week's parasha. In Perek Chaf Beis, Pasuk Vav, Sukim Vav through Yud Beis, we're given the two parshios of Shomrim. Right? The Pasuk starts off in Vav, Ki Yiten Yisho Reyo Kesef Ukelim Lishma, Beguna Avi Beis Ha'ish. When a man gives to his friend different things to watch and stolen from his house, I mean, Yimosi Aganov Yishalim Shnayim, if the thief is found, you should pay twice, right, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. If the ganav isn't found, so the shomer has to take an oath that he didn't misappropriate the pikadon, the item for himself. Then in pasuk tes, we find another description of shomrim, ki yiten ish oreo chamor oshos oshor oseh b'chol behem olishmar, omeis onishvar onishvar in roeh. Right, other halachas pertaining to Shmira. So we know Chazal tell us, and this we learned way, way back when we learned Hamafkid, whenever we learned Hamafkid, that the psukim are really talking about two different types of shomrim. That the first set of psukim is talking about a shomer chinam, it's talking about someone who's guarding something of his friend for nothing, right? He's not getting paid, he's doing him a taiva, he's doing him a favor, just to watch the item. And the shomer chinam is only going to be chayiv in a case of pshia. Right, the only time that the one who's watching for no pay is ever going to be held liable for something being for damage that takes place is negligence. In contrast, the shomer sachar, the psukah beginning with pasuk tes, describes someone who's watching over an item and getting paid for doing so. So his responsibility is a greater degree of responsibility. He also ends up paying in the case of gneva va'aveda, where the item is stolen, or the item is lost, he's obligated to make good on that as well. How does that fit back into the psukim? The psukim don't really mention the words shomer chinam versus shomer sachar. So, you know, if one looks at the items which are being watched, you know, in pasuk vav, which describes shomer chinam, the items given to the person are money or some utensils. In pasuk tes, the items being given to the person to watch are different types of animals. So the assumption seems to be that, you know, given the circumstances of way back when, you know, to ask you just, you know, here's $20, can you put it in your shelf and just make sure nothing happens to it? So that I would ask you to do for nothing as a taiva, right? So when you're watching, just, could you watch my pot? Could you watch my bike? Could you watch this? Could you watch that? Which is not a big deal. I'll ask you to do it for nothing. To ask you to watch my animal, you know, it requires a greater degree of vigilance on your part. So, b'derech klal, when someone was asked to watch an animal, it would be for schar, it would be that I'm paying you for watching this item. The Meshech Chachma calls our attention to a slight difference between the psukim, which we shrug off when we don't really think about it all that much. When, in Pasuk Vav, we're describing the halachas of Shomer Chinam, it says that when a person gives kesef or kelim lishma, when he gives money or utensils to watch to the other person, v'gunav mi beis ha'ish. If it should happen that the item is stolen from where? Mi beis ha'ish. From the house of the person who was watching it, from the house of the shomer. In contrast, in Pasuk Yud Aleph, when describing the halachas of Shomer Sachar, the pasuk says, "Him ganov yiganev me'imo yishalim liva'olov." If the item is stolen from him, from the Shomer, so then the Shomer has to make restitution to the mafkid, to the one who gave him the item to watch. So on the one hand, by Shomer Chinom, it's stolen from the man's house. By the Shomer Socher, it's stolen from him directly. All right, so you read it, say, okay, so what? Big deal. So says Meshech Chachol, yeah, it's a big deal. Hinei Le'el, so this is page Kuf Chaf Dawud in the Meshech Chachma, the top right of the page. Im Gonov Yigonov Me'imo Yishalem Leva'olof. Hinei Le'el Tziv V'gunav Mi'beis Ho'ish. Right? So we pointed out a moment ago, by Shomer Chinom, it talks about the item being stolen from his house. By Shomer Socher, the item is stolen from him. Bazeh Horelonu HaKosuv Geder HaMavdil Ben Shomer Chinom Shomer Socher. Should be Socha. Right? Says the Meshech Chachma, with this simple difference in Psukim, the Torah is revealing to us a very fundamental difference between a Shomer Chinom and a Shomer Socha. Sha'as Shomer Socha Tzorech Lios Tomid Eitzel HaDofer. The requirement which the Torah imposes upon a Shomer Socha is that the Shomer Socha has to be literally with the thing that he's watching. He can't just put it somewhere safe and then go about his business. Being a Shomer Socher means you're obligated to be with the item, to guard the item in a direct fashion. Right? Tosis and the Rosh talk about this extensively in Perek HaMafke. Tosis over there talks about what would be the case if a Shomer Socher, Shomer Socher is normally Chayiv B'Gneva, if the item is stolen, the Shomer Socher is normally going to be held accountable. What would be the case, say Tosus, if the Shomer Socher takes the item and buries it 100 feet underground? So you'd think it doesn't get safer than that, right? You know, he puts it in a safety deposit box or something of that nature. Nonetheless, after some discussion, Tosus and the Rosh both conclude that the Shomer Socher is still going to be Chayiv in a case of Gneva. In case the item is stolen even from this place where he buried it 100 feet underground, or from a safety deposit box, or whatnot, still the Shomer Socher is held chayiv. Why? Why isn't that a case of ones? We know that the halacha is that if something happens to the item, which is totally accidental, beyond the control of the Shomer Socher is not held to be liable. So I don't know, I mean, you know, the money being stolen from Fort Knox, you would think is as much as an onus as the cow being struck by lightning. I mean, what do you want the Shomer Socher to do? He put it in Fort Knox, you know, he put it in a safety deposit box, he put it 100 feet underground. Why would you hold him chayiv for a case of Geneva? So the Lashon that the Meshech Chachma quotes is, afil hikifu chomesho barzel v'nignov chayiv. Even if the Shomer Socher takes the item and surrounds it with an iron wall, right? He's still going to be chayiv if it's stolen. V'omrim, ilu hayasham, hayayachol lahatzil. Why? Because the obligation of the Shomer Socher is not, you know, put it in a safe place. It's guard it. Be with it. And the taina that when the Shomer Socher comes and says, what do you want from me? I buried it 100 feet underground. You know, how can you have a taina for me that it was stolen? So the answer that the halacha says to the Shomer Socher is, you should have been there. Right? Okay, good. So you put it 100 feet underground. But that's no substitute for guarding it. I'm sorry? Is he supposed to take it into his possession so that he can... I'm sorry? Right. So he may not physically be able to do that, but he should realize that when he can't do that, you know, he's opening himself up to liability. Right? It may not be practical for him to take the animal into his house out of the stable, for him to sleep in the stable, but he should realize that on a certain level he's opening himself up liability-wise when he does that. And that's not called an onus, right? Ilu hayasham, hayu yochel ha'atzil. If he would have been there, he would have saved it. Masha'en kein shomer chinam, tzorech lahanicha b'makom ha'mishtav. The responsibility of a shomer chinam is totally different. A shomer chinam, someone who's not getting paid for it, so he just has to put it in a safe place. That's why, even if it's stolen, it's not ultimately his responsibility. It goes back to the yesod, to the fundamental obligation and responsibility of the Shomer Chinom versus the Shomer Socher. The Shomer Chinom's responsibility is to put it in a safe place. So if he was negligent and he left it outside and it got run over, all right, so he wasn't living up to his responsibility. But as long as he put it in a reasonably safe place, all right, so what do you want? You're not paying the guy. Right? So in other words, you can't have an entina on him beyond that. Shomer Sachar, there is a taina. The Shomer Sachar is obligated to guard it, not just to put it in a safe place. He's obligated with his person to watch over it. And for that reason, he quotes an interesting din. I mean, times that kosvul ha'achronim, the hagam the shomer chirom, eno yachol achzor b'soch hazman, ha'shomer sachar yachol achzor. Right? The following scenario, the guy says, Reuven says to Shimon, I'm going to Italy for a week. You know, can you watch my CD player? Okay, so Shimon watches it for half a week, and then, you know, he realizes that it's too much of a drag to watch the CD player. So he calls up Reuven in Italy and says, okay, I want to pull out. You know, you said you're going to watch it for a week. Okay, that was at the beginning of the week. Now it's the middle of the week. You know, I changed my mind. Can he be chozer be'emsa? Can he pull out in the middle of the time that he agreed to be a shomer? So ironically, the Achronim say, by shomer chinom, he can't pull out. By shomer sachar, he can pull out. So you'd think offhand it would be the opposite, right? I mean, shomer sachar, you're getting paid. So you'd think that you have more responsibilities, and part of more responsibilities is that you can't pull out in the middle of the time. Shomer chinom, you're not getting any money. You would think shomer chinom, do whatever you want. As long as you don't blow up the CD player, it should be fine. Yeah?
By shomer chinom, if he pulls out, he's like a bashaya, because the guy's in Italy, he can't, you know, right. He can't guard it himself. But maybe by shomer chinom,
sachar.
There's a halacha that if someone's in the middle of doing, if someone's doing the job that he's getting paid for,
Okay, Gavaldik, so you obviously, you stam from Dvinsk, right? It's that Dvinsker blood running in your veins, right? I hope it's warm for a night like tonight. So the Meshech Chacham says exactly that, right? So why should the Shomer Socher be able to pull out the Shomer Chinom now? Kivan du atzma meshubut lios ima, lo liosa b'makom ha-mishtamer levad, have a poel, v'chozer af b'chatzi ayom. The Shomer Socher has a din like a poel, like a worker. What's a worker? A worker is someone that you hire him to do something. A shomer sachar essentially is a guard. You have hired this person to guard the object. A shomer chinam is not a guard. In a sense, the term shomer doesn't mean the same thing for shomer chinam as it does for shomer sachar. Shomer chinam is a, how would you put it, not a guard, but a trustee. Let's put it that, I think it's a good enough term. What's a trustee? You know, he's entrusted with it. So he sticks it in a good, fine place, and then he can forget about it, you know, for the next 7 days that Reuven is in Italy, right? But he's not obligated to do anything with his person. From the Shomer Chinam's perspective, if he stuck it in a Makom HaMishtamer, in a place which is a safe place, he's done his duty. In the case of the shomrim, we say that there's a kinyan meshicha that takes place. In other words, the shomer, when he pulls the object, is being koned the object to an extent, and that would seem to create this contractual agreement. Meaning, you're not just doing him a taifa. Once you agree to it and you pull the object, there is a kind of agreement. Again, if in the case of the shomer chinam, it may not obligate him much, but it obligates him to an extent. I mean, you know, take the case of pshia, right? So, so I left the item out and it got destroyed. So the mafkid comes to the shomer with a taina. The shomer says, what do you want from me? That's what happens. You know, you got what you paid for, right? I did you a taifa, you know. So, yeah, you didn't do me such a taifa. So, I mean, he can't say that. You know, he does have a certain level of responsibility. So part of that responsibility is that he can't turn around in the middle of the time. Yeah, and as the kinyan, I guess, is for that duration. Ironically, the Shomer Sachar, with his greater degree of obligation, can be Chozer Be'emsa. He can pull out of the middle, because as the Shomer Sachar, he's essentially a poel. He's a hired guard. So the same way a poel could be chozer b'chatzi ayom, right? So the shomer sacha could be chozer in the middle also. Now, the poel can't be chozer if by him pulling out of the middle he's going to destroy whatever he's in the middle of. So presumably, if the shomer sacha pulls out...
Yes,
well, okay, so the shomer sacha similarly as well. In other words, if he's going to pull out, he has to bear
it. But I think that's why he stood it. Because he has that ability, he should also, and he has that light ability,
mm-hmm.
he should have the right to back out. He's a pole.
Right.
Side. Right. I entered into this arrangement. I'm not happy with the arrangement. I can buy my way out of it.
Right. Right. It's biased.
So he can't, because that's why I'm asking him. It's not like he buys his way out.
Right.
He has a kidney. He's stuck with a kidney.
Right. Right, right. Okay. So the way the Meshech Chochem is approaching it is that the nature of the hischaivus, the obligation which the Shomer Sacher has accepted upon himself, is to do something himself. Right? And once you're saying, I'm going to do something myself, you are a poel. That is the definition of what a poel is.
Are you saying that a Shomchinam can be chazer even if the guy is right next door and still home? Is that really? And also, what about if he's a Shomchinam for an animal with his work to be done? Or he's not just an object that he puts aside and he has to actually put a...
Right, but he even where there is work involved in it, but Sof Kol Sof, he doesn't have that constancy which the Shomer Sachar has. In terms of the first question, in terms, can the Shomer Chinam be Chozer, let's say, if the Mafkid is Maskim,
Let's say it's not Maskim.
Okay, so then he's stuck. You know, so he can't be Chozer.
So he has to keep it even though the guy is right there?
Yeah, that's part of the agreement. But I gave it to you for 7 days. Right, you know, you're stuck
even
with it for 7 days.
Quite capable of
yeah, that was the, you know, I guess
he can't bring back his house and set itself
over. Be careful before you become a Shomer Chinam, right? But
so what's the basis of that?
That's the...
He's not being poshea by putting it into the owner's house, is he? He didn't do a poshea by saying, okay...
Well, but he's being chozer on the agreement. In other words, part of what he made the kinyan was an agreement.
From a recourse standpoint, this example would be
back
in the owner's house.
Right.
So nothing's going to happen to it.
Well, okay, but if something does happen to it during the duration of the... If it's Pshia. Okay, so it depending on... Right, but depending on what happens, it might be considered to be Pshia. So if you leave it in his front lawn, and then if you put it in his house, mamish, right. Enochinami, right. I mean, there may not be too many practical ramifications of that, but Lamaisa is not supposed to be doing that.
But if the Shomer Chinam is a contractual relationship, and he puts it back in the owner's house, the idea of the owner's house, let's say it's a college, and he puts it back in the owner's house, and then it's stolen, if he's a poshea, he's responsible. Is he not considered a shaya by backing down in the middle? He contracted for 7 days, and he gives it, and he says, no, I'm not going to do it in the middle of 7 days. He's a shaya, so if he's a shaya and it's stolen, he shouldn't be responsible.
He should be responsible, or should not be?
Should be responsible.
Right, so the shaila is the etzem fact that you're putting it back in the other guy's house considered to be pshia or not? Right? Clearly, if I leave it in his front lawn, that's pshia. If I put it back in a safe place in his house, that's not called pshia. Maybe that's called, you know, taking care of it in a sort of strange...
Could he
what? Right, no, so he can't. That's the point. He can't pre-terminate the agreement. No, he's not. It's, right, he's saying that's a deal from the Achrona. Yeah.
The shoulder of the center, how is it in a place where almost no one ever getting stolen? Why should he be responsible if the person, the owner himself, was doing the job of the hobby?
Well, you could ask that at any poel. In other words, I hired you to do something. What I hired you to do was to guard this. I'm a terrible guardian. All right, but I hired you to... That's why I hired you. If,
I know the application.
Right.
I expected to do exactly what I was going to
do. Right.
You're not a guard. You're not a marketing thing. money to be spending that I don't already have and spending it too. Why should he be responsible in that he's something sure said that he hides it from perhaps the owner of money to himself?
So, I mean, the way he's explaining the whole concept of Shomer Sachar is implicit in being a Shomer Sachar. It's not just that I'm asking you to do, I'm hiring you to do that which I would have done. I'm hiring you to do
the
guardianship. Yeah.
But if the case is where the owner said, I'm going away, I want you to take care of the way I have to take care of it. And due diligence is exactly that.
So if he's mochel, if he's mochel, right? In other words, so he can...
Right. But
then the owner is basically being mochel on really what he could have demanded from the Shomer Sachar absolute guardianship. The fact that he's not demanding that is an act of mechila, you know, on the part of the owner. Right? So in other words, he's giving up on some of the rights. He has the right to give up on some of the rights that he could have demanded.
Many times it's implied a person tells, come on, you can get your own thing here.
Right.
I need to take care of my things. This is all. And a person in his house would not watch those plants constantly. They would water them. They would have to watch them. Someone breaks it and steals the plants.
Right. So that's if the owner chooses to say, look, it's no big deal, I wouldn't have done that myself, that's his right. It's not implied. So it says that Ashachachma, all that comes to the Pasuk. Is that a foolish Pakasuf? This distinction between a Shomer Sof and a Shomer Chinam ultimately is in the Pasuk itself. When it talks about the item being stolen from the Shomer Chinam, it's stolen from his house. Because for the purposes of Shomer Chinam, it's enough to place it in the house in a safe place. By Shomer Sachar, in contrast, it talks about it being stolen from him. And Me'imo implies from, you know, very much from him. It's not Me'ito, right? Me'imo, from his essence, in a sense. Shekein Shmiraso Lios Ba'atzmo Eitzel Dover HaNishmar. Right, because the kind of shmirah which is demanded of the Shomer Sachar is guardianship in a literal sense, that he with his body is supposed to protect this item. If it's stolen, it's stolen from him, as opposed to being stolen so simply from the house.
I have trouble with the cause and the effect, or the, I don't know what you call it. Rashi explained by both of these, or really by the second one, that the first one was the Shomer Chinam, how do I know? Because he's part of it. And the second one, the Shomer Sachar, how do I know? Because he's
not. It's chayav, right.
So that, you know, that leaves something because I don't know. And I only know because I know later on. I figured out that the Shomer Chinam is the one way the Shomer Sachar knows it. The pasuk doesn't tell me that.
Right.
The pasuk doesn't tell me. But now, Rabbi Bachman is saying also the pasuk really doesn't tell me. The pasuk, he's saying, you know how I heard that this pasuk is talking about a Shomer Sachar? Because Tosfos in Hamasi says that it's talking about a Shomer Sachar.
No, so I think the way I read the Meshech Chachma is as follows. We know that the first Pesukim we talk about is Shomer Chinam, the second Pesukim we talk about Shomer Sachar. How do we know that? The way Rashi tells us.
Don't argue that point,
right.
But I don't know it from any possibility.
No, so the Meshech Chachma is not saying that this diuk of Beso Imo is what tells you one is a Chinam and one is a Sachar. Once we know which one's which, however we know it, so now this Pesuk gives us further insight as to the lomdusha difference between a Shomer Chinam and a Shomer Sachar. Right? Now that we know that, we can go back to the Pesukim and say, hey, these nuances in the Pesukim point to a nuance in terms of what the lomdus of a Shomer Chinam is versus what the lomdus of a Shomer Sachar is. That's what he's getting at, the way I understand it. Right? So that's, again, you know, classic Meshech Chachma, there's a little bit of Torah, there was a lot of Torah Shebaal Peh, which is in the Torah Shebiksav, if we would just seek to read it properly. I'm sorry?
A paid worker.
Yeah, I mean, the halacha is about, you know, when exactly, but yeah, if he's hired for a certain amount of time, he can be chozer v'emsa hayom, he can break off the term of contract.
It's not looked upon about
life. Right, it's not a good thing, but it's a right which he technically has. Okay, that's nezikin, right? A little choshen mishpat, just to whet the appetite a little bit. I want to look over Kuf Chaf Hei on the next page, the left-hand column, where, as we continue traveling through Parshas Mishpatim, we encounter the pasuk Perachov Beis Pasuk Yutes, Zoveach Lo Elohim Yacharam, he who offers up sacrifices to a foreign god will die, Bilti Lashem Levado, only to Hashem alone. And that second half of the pasuk is somewhat unusual. You know, what does it add? You know, yeah, it just says Zoveach Lo Elohim Acherim Yacharam. Right, anyone who sacrifices to foreign gods will be killed. Right, what the syntax is funny. Bilti Lashem Levado, only to Hashem alone. Right, just a very, very funny way of expressing itself. So, in explaining this pasuk, the Meshech Chochma also gets into a difference between Shabbos and Yom Tov. Ho'inyan, ki b'Shabbos k'siv Shabbos hi Lashem. When the Torah talks about Shabbos, it calls Shabbos as being a day for Hashem. Right, that's the Zemer. Shabbos Hayom Lashem. Ma she'enkin b'chol ma'adim, as opposed to Yom Tovim, where it always says, Kodesh yiyeh lochem. Right? It says with regard to the Yom Tovim that this day should be holy to you. Why? She'ochol nefesh mutter bo. M'nei she'yisro mekadshin osa. Ma she'enkin Shabbos hu Lashem de mekadshin v'kayma, v'chein ochol nefesh osir bo. Right, there's a fundamental difference between Yom Tov and Shabbos. Shabbos is for God, meaning that since Shabbos is declared holy by God, in other words, we have no say in when it becomes Shabbos. I mean, we can make Shabbos early, we can end Shabbos late, but we can't start Shabbos late and end Shabbos early. We can't move Shabbos over to other days of the week or anything like that. The basic core of Shabbos is sanctified by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's Lashem. So Mimela, says Meshech Chochma, that's why ochel nefesh, that's why cooking, is aser on Shabbos. Because cooking is taking care of the needs of man. You only have the right to take care of the needs of man when man plays a role in determining the kedusha of this day. So on Yom Tov, whose kedusha stems from human beings, in other words, Klal Yisrael's mekadesh l'chodesh, which in turn is mekadesh l'Yom Tovim, so we have a role in determining the kedusha of Yom Tov. So because we have a role in determining the kedusha of Yom Tov, it's ours, in a sense. We have, I don't think, full ownership. We have partial ownership. Chatzi l'Hashem, chatzi l'Hashem, right? You know, we have at least partial ownership over the existence of Yom Tov. And that partial ownership is what leads to the heter of Ochol Nefesh. As opposed to Shabbos. Shabbos is l'Hashem. It's totally to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And therefore, there's no heter of ochel nefesh, because again, we don't have any, we're not partial partners, so to speak, in the existence of Shabbos. But then he goes on to say as follows, uv'chol zos k'siv u'shmartem es ha-shabbos ki kodesh ilochem. Nonetheless, we are going to encounter a pasuk in a couple of parshiyos in Kisisa, where the pasuk says, you should guard Shabbos, ki kodesh ilochem, because Shabbos is holy to you. Shibiprat Masura Biyadchem. In one respect, Shabbos does belong to us, namely, Fula Pikuach Nefesh, the Refuah L'Cholish Yishbo Sakana. Right? There is one time where HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, guys, Klal Yisrael, Shabbos belongs to you. Do it with it whatever you want. What's that case? In the case of Pikuach Nefesh, Pikuach Nefesh, somebody's life is in danger. So God says, I no longer control Shabbos. It's now up to you. Call Hatzalah, do whatever you gotta do in order to save the guy's life. Shabbos dechuya. Shabbos is pushed off. And Masuri hilochem. Kemo she'amru, you mopei hei omid beis. Right? In that case, shvartem es ha-shabbos ki kodesh hilochem. There's one case where Shabbos is given over to your control and not in the hands of the Ribbono Shalom. Masha enken avodah zarah. But avodah zarah is even on a higher madrega than Shabbos. Ein misrapim bo af b'sakana. Right? The Gemara avodah zarah says that I can't use avodah zarah as a source of ripui, as a source of healing, as a source of medicine, even if it means the person's going to die. They're hiring the al-yama. Person has to be ready to die, rather than use different kinds of idolatrous cures in order to save himself. That's what our pasuk means, bilti lashem levado, meaning the iser avodah zarah is totally in the hands of God. The Isurim of Yom Tov are partially given over to human beings. Even the Yisurim of Shabbos are sometimes given over to human beings for our control. But the Isser of Avodah Zorah, Zoveach L'Elohim Yacharon, the notion that death accompanies the one who worships Avodah Zorah, worships idolatry, there's no ands, ifs, and buts. Bilti Lashem Levado. That Isser of Avodah Zorah is entirely in the hands of God, and there are no exceptions that are ever going to be made to that, even in the case of Pikuach Nefesh. Shilochem Eino Moser Klal, Af L'Havriyachem U'Lahami Kiyumchem. Even if it means that, you know, the person, Rachmanu Litzlan, is going to die as a result, there's no compromise that can be made with Avodah Zarah. Right? Again, a fascinating mix of the Torah Shebaal Peh to explain this strange pasuk of Torah Shebaal Peh. Yeah, there's a sug in Masechta Avodah Zarah in the second parak where it talks about, it gives a actual example of a nephew of Rabbi Yishmael, where basically Rabbi Yishmael paskened for him that the cure for a certain ailment that he had involved, you know, some Avodah Zarah type of thing, and he basically told him, you know, he ended up dying as a result of the, you know, of his reluctance to use Avodah Zarah as a cure. So yeah, I mean, that's, you know, that is the halacha. Okay, there are a few interesting pieces with regard to the Yom Tovim, which are discussed a little bit later in the parsha. There's in Perek Chaf Gimel Pasuk Yud, we're given a whole list of different halachas that are time related. And we'll just go through some of them, you know, just first in the Pesukim, and then we'll catch the Pasuk which bothered the Meshech Chachma, and we'll see what he does in terms of explaining it. Again, here we're going to see not so much Torah Shebaal Peh and Torah Shebiksav working together, but just an attention to a Pasuk that just really, you know, one of these things doesn't belong. You know, we'll see a Pasuk that just doesn't fit in with the rest of the flow, and most of us just ignore it. The Meshech Chachma picks up on it and, you know, has a very interesting pshat in it. So, Perek Chaf Gimel Pasuk Yud, first we're introduced to the idea of Shemitah. B'sheish shonim tizras ha'isechav yasavtus tvuasa. V'ashviz tishmetenu natashto v'achlu av yonei amecha. Yisron tocha chayas ha'sodeh. Kintasi l'chayim v'chol v'zeisecha. Right? There's a concept of Shemitah. Then in your days, we're given the idea of Shabbos. Sheishis yomim tasim ha'asecha v'yom ha'shvi tishbos l'man yonuach shorcha v'chamarecha. V'inofesh b'ramoscha v'hager. Right, work for 6 days, rest on the seventh. Right, Shemitah, Shabbos. In Pasuk Yudalit, we're introduced to the Shlosh Regalim. Shlosh Regalim, topically Bashonis, Chag HaMatzos, right, the Chag HaKotzir, the Chag HaOsif, Shlosh Pa'od Mashon, Yerach HaZukur, Kal Pnei HaAdon Hashem. Right, you should go to the Beis HaMikdash on those three holidays. Very, very normal flow. Shemitah, right, in other words, an overarching year of Shabbos observance, in a sense, Shabbos itself, and then the Shlosh Regalim, the three Yom Tovim, right? All of that fits together. But then there's this one Pasuk smack in the middle. Pasuk Yud Gimel. U'v'chol asher amarti aleichem tishomeru. You should guard everything that I've told you, which first of all is rather ambiguous. What should you do? Everything I told you. Okay, what exactly does that Pasuk add in any way? Right? And more than that, the names of other gods you should not mention, it should not even be heard on your lips. Right? So Rashi brings, there are a couple of Yisurim over here. Shlo yomar lo shmor li b'tzad avodah zara plonis, otamoni b'yom avodah zara plonis, don't stand for me by this avodah zara, you shouldn't even mention avodah zara. Right? Okay, fine. No problem with that halacha per se. What's that halacha doing here? This is a description of holy times on the Jewish calendar. Shemitah, Shabbos, Yom Tov. Why are we jumping out of sequence over here to a discussion that has to do with Avodah Zarah? Right? First of all, what's the first half of this pasuk? B'chol asher amarti aleichem tishomeru. Guard everything that I told you. And why mention the iser to mention Avodah Zarah all of a sudden? Really very much out of context. So, on Kuf Chav Zayim, on the left-hand column, the top, you know, the top of the page, about four lines in. Chol asher amarti aleichem tishomer shalosh regalim tochok. Hu hakdama lemitzvah shalosh regalim. This pasuk, which on the surface has nothing to do with anything, it's all about avodah zarah, is really an introduction to the mitzvah of gimel regalim, which is going to follow. Shikishiyavol liros es pnei Hashem, because the Gemara tells us that three times a year when they came to be Ola Rego, for Hayu Migalin Lohem Akruvim, the Gemara in Yuma says that they would reveal the Kruvim, you know, to those people. They would push aside the Parochas, and the Kruvim in the Kodesh HaKadoshim would be visible. You know, the people wouldn't go into the Kodesh HaKadoshim, but standing out, you know, at the periphery of the Azara, they'd be able to see all the way into the Beis HaMikdosh and see the Kruvim. Of course, we know Chazal tell us that the Kruvim, when Klal Yisrael and HaKadosh Baruch Hu were having a good relationship, the Kruvim themselves would be hugging one another. Now a person might come to the Beis HaMikdosh when he's Ola Rego and be shown these Kruvim and think, what's going on over here? I thought I was a member of a monotheistic religion. You know, we got all these statues, you know, that are in the Kodesh HaKodashim. I mean, we know that the Goyim felt like that, right? You know, when they captured the Kruvim, they commented, you know, everybody told us that the Jews believe in one God, and here they have these idols, these statues, in their Holy of Holies. They're not really the monotheistic people they made themselves out to be. So Klal Yisrael may think that way. Klal Yisrael could be very tempted when they're Ola Rego to look at the Kruvim and say, hey, this looks like Avodah Zarah. This looks like some kind of imagery which is going on in our holiest place. Right? So therefore, there has to be some mention of the Isser Avodah Zarah prior to a mention of the Shlosh Regalim to prepare the people. You will be exposed during the Shlosh Regalim to something that on the surface may strike you as Avodah Zarah. Realize that it's not. So, this he doesn't say, but I think it's implicit in what he does say. What's the first half of the pasuk? Guard whatever I told you. Meaning, even though you'll be tempted, seeing the Kruvim, to either reject Yiddishkeit or think Avodah Zarah is not so bad, because after all, we have something like that in the Kodesh HaKodashim. No, despite what you see, still hold on to everything that I told you in the past. The image of the Kruvim that you're going to see shouldn't upset the apple cart in the way you look at things. Don't even mention, again, Chazal Darshan, as Rashi brings, that this is about Avodah Zarah in general. You're not supposed to mention the names of foreign gods. But in the context of the Meshech Chochmas Pshat, I think the way he's teaching the Pasuk is that don't even raise the Hava Amina, that what you see going on over here with the Kruvim is somehow Avodah Zarah. Don't even go there. Don't even talk in such a fashion. Because it's just simply not. I'm telling you from the get-go, you're going to be shocked by something, but don't be shocked. And says the Meshech Chochma, this is a common theme. V'chein b'tisok kosav, Elohei maseich alosas eloch, kodem regolim. If you look in Parashas Kisisa, where many of these halachas repeat themselves over again, there too, the pasuk Elohei maseich alosas eloch, don't make golden, engraved, molten images of gods, is a pasuk which immediately precedes the introduction of the Shlosh Regalim. Why? So says the Meshech Chochma, because there needs to be a special azhara about Avodah Zarah prior to introducing the Shlosh Regalim, because of this havamina that people might have with regard to the Kruvim. So it's consistent. You know, the notion that Avodah Zarah, the Isser against Avodah Zarah, has to be underscored right before we get to the Shlosh Regalim.
The
Gemara says they pushed aside the parochas during Bayis Sheni, and they were able, I guess, the way. I'm sorry. they were no kruv in the Vayisheni, so then right, no, sorry, so Vayisrishon. Vayisrishon, they had the parochas, Vayisheni, they had the amatraxon, they had the wall. But the amatraxon, they couldn't really push aside. Right, but the Vayisrishon, I'm sorry? There was a door by Vayisrishon. No, but the amatraxon, I'm saying, was by Vayisheni, Davka. So they pushed aside the parochas. Apparently, the line of sight was such that they were able to see straight into where the Kruven were. That's the Gemara. He quotes this Gemara Nundalot and Aleph and Yuma that they would roll aside the parochas and they were able to see the Kruven by the Shlosh Regaal.
Do we know why, based on this, do we know why we had the Kruven? Or am I not allowed to go here?
It's interesting. The Kuzari writes the only difference between the Kruvim and the Egel Azov is that God commanded us to make Kruvim, and He didn't command us to make the Egel Azov. Meaning, you know, really, I mean, you know, conceptually, there's not too much difference between them. I mean, the fundamental difference is the Kuzari, which again makes all the difference in the world, is one God told us to do, and one God did not tell us to do. So that's the Kuzari says, that's... I'm sorry? That's everything, right. In other words, I mean, it represents, I mean, we can understand why. It's just, you know, it's a sense it's playing with fire. And as it represents the attraction between Klal Yisrael and the Ribbono Shel Olam, there's an idea to represent that graphically. But again, we wouldn't be able to do that on our own unless HaKadosh Baruch Hu came and was mitzave us, you know, to make such a thing. Okay, so that's one interesting idea he has over here with the Regalim. Another fascinating little point which he makes is the bottom of that same page on Kuf Chav Zayin. He writes as follows, Mechilta, Ne'emar Shlosh Regalim B'Shvius Shelo Yistarsu Shlosh Regalim B'Mekomam. Right, he quotes a Mechilta. The Mechilta writes, the Mechilta comments on the fact that the parasha of the Shlosh Regalim is first introduced with a discussion of the mitzvah of Shemitah. Now we know we're not going to have a real full treatment of the mitzvah of Shemitah until much later in Chumash and Parashas Behar. So then why does it bother introducing Shemitah over here? So says the Mechilta, this addresses a havamin. A person might think that somehow the Shlosh Regalim wouldn't apply during the Shemitah year. So the idea is there's a mitzvah of Shemitah. And Afal Pichein, you know, despite all of that, even during the Shemitah year, there's still a mitzvah of Shlosh Regalim. Umat Talmud Lomar Elokei Yisrael. Why does the Pasuk talk about worshipping the God of Israel, Elokei Yisrael? Right? So he writes, Elo Al Yisrael Yiched Shmo Biyosef. It's because on the Jewish people, HaKadosh Baruch Hu designated his name excessively. Now what exactly does that mean? So he goes on to explain the Mechilta as follows. Ho'inyun, da'amadim nemru kan al ha'oviv kotzir ve'osif. In this parasha in particular, the Moadim are related to, you know, their role as agricultural festivals. Right? Chag HaMatzos, you know, Pesach is described as something you observe in the Chodesh Ha'oviv, the month of spring, right? So that could be understood as saying it's a way of celebrating the spring in an agricultural sense. Shavuos is described as the Chag HaKotzir, the holiday of reaping. Sukkot is described as the Chag HaOsif, the holiday in which you gather stuff in. In other words, each Yom Tov is referred to in agricultural terms. V'hava amina shlo yishkechu, so mitzvah laharos shalosh pa'amid bashana lodas kihu me'ashem k'mo she'oris tzarech levo'o la'odo. I might think that what is the purpose of Pesach, Shavuos, and Sukkot? I might think that they are exclusively agricultural festivals and that the farmer shouldn't forget that the land belongs to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So 3 times a year he has to report to his boss, to the one who owns the land, to acknowledge that the land belongs to Hashem. Avo b'shviyah shivkar yodu l'Hashem ha'ores v'enum choshem v'kotzrim. But I would think that during the Shemitah year, When anyway, what's the whole Shemitah year about? It's recognizing the land belongs to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. They're not plowing, they're not reaping. Lo boy, Shlosh Regalim. I would think that the Shemitah year makes the Shlosh Regalim moot. Because what if the whole point of the three regalim is to be agricultural acknowledgments that the land belongs to God? Well, you're doing that every single day during the Shemitah year. So lachen komash melon lo yachru regalim imakoma. That's why the pasuk has to tell us that the three regalim are still, you know, in force even during the Shemitah year. Now, why? The ishbuzet inyan acher. Because the three regalim are not simply about agricultural celebrations. They're not simply about acknowledging that the land belongs to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Mipnei shehashem yisporach dovuk el nafshos ha'uma ha'yisraelis ve'hema kechelek min haklal v'zeh chelki Hashem omra nafshi. HaKadosh Baruch Hu clings to the souls of the Jewish nation, and all of the individual members of Klal Yisrael are like a part of that great whole, of that great unit called Klal Yisrael, which is connected to Hashem. Now, people can't constantly cling to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We have to take care of these little things like parnasa, like providing for ourselves. Right? You have to go out and gather in the, you know, be it the grain from the field, or the, you know, the tax returns, or whatever it is that's going to put the bread on the table. So that's why the Shlosh Regalim exist. Three times a year, the Jewish people are supposed to leave the Parnassa, which ordinarily they have to engage in. And in a sense, the three Regalim act as a time for the Jewish people to recharge their batteries. Such that when they return to their work, back in the field and back in their houses, there'll be sort of like a limb which is dangling from the body, right? They're not directly attached to the body, so to speak, meaning in the absence of their being in the Beis HaMikdosh, they're not as directly plugged into Hashem Yisbarach, but at least they're like an Eivar HaMedudo, they're at least like a limb which is loosely connected. It's still considered to be a part of the original body with regard to Tumah V'Tahara. That's how they merit the term that God is called Elokei Yisrael, the one who's connected to Klal Yisrael. Right.
I'm sorry, so what is the purpose of the regalim?
Oh, so he's a little vague. That's the MS. So I think what he's saying in this passage is as follows. The regalim, besides being an acknowledgement that God owns Eretz Yisrael, which they are, but if they were simply an acknowledgement that God owns Eretz Yisrael, so you wouldn't need them during Shemitah, the regalim also serve as an opportunity to recharge our direct connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, something which we need even during the Shemitah year. Because even during the Shemitah year, when we're refraining from plowing and working the fields, and people have the opportunity to learn Torah, nonetheless, one is not as plugged in to this connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu as one is when one goes up to Yerushalayim and is by the Beis HaMikdash. So the need for that spiritual recharging, which is another element of the Shlosh Regalim, is something which is applicable and relevant even during the Shemitah year, so they're not waived, you know, even during the Shemitah year. Now, that fact leads to HaKadosh Baruch Hu being referred to as Elokei Yisrael, right? That's really a reference to Parshas Kisisa. In Parshas Kisisa, when describing Re'iyah, the mitzvah being Ola Regel, says, Shalosh Ba'am B'Bashana Yerecho Zechurcha Espenei Ha'adon Hashem, Elokei Yisrael. We don't have it here in Parshas Mishpatim, but the parallel pasuk in Parshas Kisisa refers to Hashem as Elokei Yisrael. What enables God to be called Elokei Yisrael, to maintain that constant relationship with Klal Yisrael? It's the Shlosh Regalim. The fact that we check in three times a year with HaKadosh Baruch Hu from the Beis HaMikdash reignites that relationship such that even when we're distant from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so to speak, you know, during the rest of the year, when we're not in the Beis HaMikdash, God's Hashpa is still felt, and he can still be referred to as Elokei Yisrael. What do you do nowadays when we don't have Beis HaMikdash, we're not Ole Rego? So I guess you have to say that some of that Hashpa'a lasts over time as well. It's not just, you know, from Pesach to Shavuos, from Shavuos to Sukkot, from Sukkot to Pesach. But even throughout the years when the Beis HaMikdash is not there, that juice is still going, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu can still be called Elokei Yisrael. Another concept, another interesting, you know, concept which he throws in with regard to the Yom Tovim, it's just a little bit further down on that page in Kuf Chof Ches. Right, Chag HaOsif. Sukkot is referred to in our parasha as Chag HaOsif. Right? V'chein b'kisisa. So too in parasha's kisisa. It's called Chag HaOsif. It's not called Chag HaSukkos. Lo kein b'devarim k'siv v'chag HaSukkos. In Devarim, in contrast, in parasha's Re'e, it's called Chag HaSukkos. What's the difference between Chag HaOsif and Chag HaSukkos? Hatam opi divri agra. It's a beautiful Mashiach Chachma. You can understand this based on the famous word of the Gra. The Gra writes this in Shir HaShirim. Shekishenitan luchos hashniyim, u'moshe yored min ahor, v'chazru anani akov v'betes vav l'chodesh tishrei, nistavu al sukkos ki yodua. Says the Gra, what's the connection? Why do we sit in sukkos, stavka, on the 15th of Tishrei? Right? I mean, this is an old question that goes back to the Torah. We sit in sukkos to remind us of the anani akovod, with which HaKadosh Baruch Hu protected us when we were in the Midbar. Okay, good. So we really could have observed that any time during the year. And in fact, if anything, you would think the obvious time to celebrate the Anani HaKavod is in Nisan. We left Mitzrayim in Nisan. That's presumably when the Anani HaKavod started. So why don't we observe Sukkot in Nisan? So the Torah gives a simple answer, says the Torah. Well, because in Nisan, it's no big deal to sit outside. Right? It's not obvious that if you sit outside during the month of Nisan, that you're doing so in commemoration of anything religious. Sit outside in Tishrei. In Tishrei, you know, I mean, it's rainy, it's cold, it's uncomfortable. If you do that during Tishrei, you know, so then it's very clear that you're sitting outside the Tzarech HaMitzvah. That's the Torah's explanation. The Vilna Gaon gives a different explanation, more fundamental explanation. Says the Vilna Gaon, if you make a cheshbon, so when the Klal Yisrael built the Egel, the Anani HaKavod disappeared. And they stayed away until after the Luchos Shniyos were brought down on Yom Kippur. Right? And at that time, Moshe Rabbeinu told Klal Yisrael to start getting together stuff to build the Mishkan. When they finally got the stuff together to build the Mishkan, that's when the Anani HaKavod came back. That's the Vilna Gaon makes a cheshbon that the Anani HaKavod returned on the 15th of Tishrei, right? Not the first 15th of Tishrei, the second 15th of Tishrei, the second year. I shouldn't say like that. In other words, the half a year after they had left Mitzrayim, right? So the first 15th of Tishrei after they had left Mitzrayim. And Mimela, it's at that time that this festival on the 15th of Tishrei became Chag HaSukkos, right? It was because it was at that time that the Anani HaKavod returned, and since the Anani HaKavod returned at that time, that's when this holiday became associated with Sukkot. So Mimela says the Meshech Chochma as follows. V'lochach oz kodem dibro shnios nikra chag ha'osif v'lo chag ha'sukkos. So basically, says the Meshech Chochma, there are really two layers to this holiday which we observe on the 15th of Tishrei. Originally, that holiday on the 15th of Tishrei was not Sukkot. It was an agricultural holiday called Chag HaOsif. Once the Anani HaKavod, and that's referenced here in Mishpatim and in Parashas Kisisa, both of which come before the Luchos HaShniyos on Yom Kippur. Originally, there was a seven-day holiday called Chag HaOsif, and they wouldn't have known what you were talking about if you called it Sukkot. It's only after the Luchos HaShniyos were brought down on that Yom Kippur and the Anani HaKavod came back that the holiday now took on a second dimension. And now it's not only Chag HaOsif, it's also Chag HaSukkos. So when you fast forward to Dvarim, to Parashas Re'eh, it's called Chag HaSukkos. From an agricultural perspective, that was the time when you were bringing in all the stuff from the field. So like you said before in the previous piece, it's an opportunity to to acknowledge HaKadosh Baruch Hu's role in granting the bounty. They were still committed to. Well, no. In other words, if you look in Mishpatim and Kisiso, there's no reference to the idea of Sukkos altogether. If it was given, it was given al Shem Ha'asid, right? In other words, the way he's presenting is that, you know. I don't know how the chronology exactly is going to work out, but the way he's presenting is at least as far as they knew then, right? Maybe Moshe Rabbeinu had more elaborate instructions from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but I mean, at least as far as they knew then, the only role that the 15th of Tishrei played was a seven-day holiday called Chag HaOsef.
It's not necessarily like Pesach or Aretz or anything like that.
No.
It started.
Pashtus, they started in the Midbar. Right.
And they were sitting in Sukkos Mamash.
Right.
So it's really...
Right, but a half a fool in a sense. Right, but in other words, as far as they knew at the time, the significance of the 15th of Tishrei was simply an agricultural holiday. Yeah. Right, but remember, Emor is also post Luchos Shnios. Right, so in other words, that does make sense. This Meshech Chochma also fits in with a pshat from Rav Soloveitchik. He doesn't quote this Meshech Chochma. We spoke about this once on Sukkos, and it's a very disturbing pshat on some level from Rav Soloveitchik, but it fits in well with this Meshech Chochma, this idea. The Rav Tainud that the mitzvah of Sukkah is not part of the Etzem Kedushas Hayom of the Yontif of Sukkos. Right, and that's the Rav pointed out. If you look in the Pesukim and Parshas Emor that you just referenced, it's very, very bizarre. The Torah spells out in Parshas Emor, Perichov Gimel, Pesukim, where is it? Lamed Gimel, right? But we'll get to Lamed Tess in a minute. Starting with Lamed Gimel, the Torah spells out this holiday called Sukkos. Dadro b'nei Yisrael in Rabbah Chamisha also Yom L'Chodesh HaShvi Yazeh Chag HaSukkos Shivas Yomim L'Hashem, right? This is a holiday called Sukkos. And it tells you some of the dinim. There's a first day, eighth day, okay, don't do melocha. Then Lamed Zayin, Eila Mo'abe Hashem, these are all the Yom Tovim. And then, kind of like an afterthought, Pasuk Lamed Tes, by the way, I forgot to mention, B'chamisha also yom l'chodesh hashvi, right, on the 15th day, v'os b'chem es tfuas ha'oret, t'chog v'es chag Hashem shivas yomim, right, you should celebrate this holiday for 7 days, you can take Lulav and Esrog in Pasuk Mem, and Pasuk Mem Beis, v'asukas teishu shivas yomim, right? So what's going on in the Pesukim? There was this holiday, and we finished telling you about it, and now we're done. Oh, and by the way, we forgot, there's minor details of the holidays. There's a thing called Lulav and Esrog, there's a thing called Sukkos. You know, that's a whole holiday. What else is there on the Yom Tov? So Soloveitchik said, if you read the Pesukim carefully, so it sounds like that the mitzvah of Sukkah and the mitzvah of Dalet Minim are not part of the Etzem Kedushas Hayom of that holiday of Sukkos. Right, and he brought different rayas in halacha to that idea that you can kind of divorce the holiday from the mitzvah of yeshivas sukkah, which is not directly tied to kedushas hayom. I mean, in part, the Rav used that to explain the fact that the idea of yom tov sheni as applied to sukkahs doesn't fully carry over with the mitzvahs of dalet minim and Sukkah. I mean, Dalet Minim, we know that Dalet Minim doesn't apply at all on Shmini Atzeres, which is really, in a sense, if you were just concerned with Sveika de Yoma, right, so Dalet Minim should carry over to Shmini Atzeres. And even Sukkah, which does carry over to Shmini Atzeres, the Rav had a way of explaining that that's not a fundamental aspect of the idea of Sveika de Yoma. It's a special halacha, you know, that Sukkah carries over to Shmini Atzeres and Chutz La'aretz. Al-Kapana, without getting into the halachic rayas, I remember when we learned that piece from the Rav, many people were bothered. What are you telling me? The mitzvah of Sukkah is not tied to the Kedushas Hayom of Chag HaSukkos? That's a little bit disturbing. I mean, we call it Chag HaSukkos. The truth is, this idea fits in beautifully with the Meshech Chachma. The Meshech Chachma is saying, if you look historically, there seem to have been two layers in the way in which the Yontif of Sukkos was introduced to the Jewish people. God originally gave it to the Jewish people as Chag HaOsef. It's a holiday. Okay, but self-kosof, it was still given in two layers. So in other words, you can peel away the sukkah layer and still be left with a holiday underneath, right? No matter how many years the sukkah layer was laying on top of it. But in other words, there is a layer of the yomtiv of sukkahs, which is chag ha'asif, which is just a seven-day holiday during the month of Tishrei, which is not directly tied to the notion of sitting in a sukkah. Not mixing two simchas together. So there is a concept that you shouldn't mix two simchas together, but that's really more an idea of a Torah simcha with a personal simcha, meaning I shouldn't get married on Yom Tov, right? Because the Torah says to be happy, and I'm mixing my personal happiness with that. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu has the right to take a holiday and give it different layers of meaning, so to speak. So in other words, it's okay for the Yontif to start out as Chag HaOsef and then only have Chag HaSukkos imposed upon it at a later time. Right? So again, in a very just beautiful reading of the Pesukim themselves, the fact that the Yontif is not called Chag HaSukkos until that Pesuk in Emor, and then later on in Re'eh, and our original introduction to the Yontif is under the name Chag HaOsef, implies, like the Gra, that the element of celebrating Sukkos, Anane HaKavod, was not actually part of the original Yom Tov of Sukkos, right? And again, like the Rav suggests, it fits in very nicely to the Pesukim in Emor, where the Yom Tov of Sukkos is presented in two parts. There's the Yom Tov, and then there's the Sukkos aspect, which is presented as an afterthought. It is an afterthought because it's a layer of the Yom Tov, which was only added on 6 months after the Yom Tov was originally presented. Even though in the
first part,
right. So I mean, right. So the way you're going to have to explain that is Lamaisa by now it's Chag HaSukkos, but you know that's not you know that's its married name. You know, I mean, it's you know the maiden name of the holiday is really Chag HaOsef, you know, something like that. Okay. Okay. We'll stop here for tonight and shkar to everybody for braving the snow. It's a bechin of the postal service, and Hashem will pick up next week with Parshas Kirov.